This podcast was recorded Thursday, April 12th at 12 p.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like Bill O'Neill might get stuck in traffic on Cincinnati's Brent Spence Bridge.
Or something else. Okay, let's talk politics.
Welcome to Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly political podcast. Well, we always have that disclaimer at the top of the podcast saying that things may change after we record this, and change they did last week.
They sure did. In a matter of a week, it came out that Ohio House Speaker Cliff Rosenberger had hired an attorney to help him cope with questions the FBI was asking about him. Then it came out that Attorney General Mike DeWine and candidate for governor Mike DeWine told Rosenberger that he should resign if he did anything wrong. Then Rosenberger announced he will resign, both as speaker and state representative.
Rosenberger released a statement proclaiming his innocence, but said the inquiry will take a long time to settle and it will interfere with issues that Ohio lawmakers need to address. Speaker Pro Tem Kirk Schuring said Rosenberger put the state and the chamber ahead of himself.
He's got a great passion and love for the state, and it was really tough on him, and he showed that emotionally.
The sudden fall stunned GOP lawmakers like Ryan Smith.
I think he actively did it on his own for the betterment of the institution and the people of Ohio.
Now, Smith, a close ally of Rosenberger, is fighting hard against Larry Householder to be the next House Speaker.
While most Republicans inside the State House praised Rosenberger, Mary Taylor, the, quote, anti-establishment candidate for governor and current lieutenant governor, did not. She said the case illustrates the good old boy swamp at the State House.
Democratic Party Chair David Pepper said the resignation and DeWine's phone call to Rosenberger points to a culture that is completely broken. The reporter who has led the coverage of the Speaker Rosenberger's situation, his questionable rental of a downtown condo, his expensive dinners and trips abroad, that would be Dayton Daily News State House reporter Laura Bischoff. She joins us now. Laura, welcome to Snollygoster.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. It's my inaugural appearance.
I know. Well, it's a big story. You broke the story last Friday about the FBI questions and Rosenberger lawyering up. But let's go back even a bit further than that. This all began about a year ago. When did the ethical questions begin? And you raised those in your reporting back then.
Well, I got a tip that Speaker Rosenberger was renting a luxury condo at North Bank. I think it's North Bank Condos.
Right in the Arena District, yeah.
Sure, overlooking the Scioto. And that he was in a condo owned by Ginny Reagan, who is a very prominent GOP donor and supporter of Ohio House Republicans. And so I did some, you know, records checks and found out the value of the properties and who owned them and et cetera. And then I called up the speaker and he said, yeah, I've been renting the property. And I checked with the Joint Legislative Ethics Commission before I did so. And I'm paying a market rate rent. And then when I asked him how much he's paying, he declined to disclose that. And then I followed up with that with a check on his financial disclosure statement, which is also filed with JLEC. It showed that he owed a debt to Ginny Reagan's LLC, and he admitted that it was back rent. So,
but again, no figure on that back rent.
Right. And, you know, that's kind of a loophole in Ohio ethics laws, is that they can receive gifts and owe debts, and they don't really have to say the nature of the gift, the value of the gift, how much the debt is, et cetera.
So this was within the letter of the law.
Sure. As far as we know, and it was disclosed. Now, Cliff Rosenberger will have to file an ethics statement again May 15th, even though he's going to be out of office. So we'll see what that says.
And getting to the latest situation, the trips to London, where Rosenberger met with the granddaughter of Winston Churchill. He was also accompanied by at least two lobbyists from the payday lending industry.
That's correct. You know, there were some Facebook photos posted of Steve Diamond. He's an Ohio-based lobbyist, independent lobbyist with several clients, including Select Management Resources. That's the parent company of an auto title lender. That's kind of like a payday lender where they use your title to your car as collateral for the loan. And then his business partner, who is based in South Carolina, Leslie Gaines, she is also registered in South Carolina as the lobbyist for the same company. And Gaines posted on her Facebook photo, or Facebook page rather, photos of she and Steve Diamond and also Cliff Rosenberger in London. So that's where we made that link, that my sources were telling me that the FBI's inquiry has a number of threads, but the thread that we're aware of is this trip to London.
And Rosenberger says he's the victim of dirty politics here. His name's being dragged through the mud. He says he has total confidence that he'll be vindicated. At the very least, this is bad optics, right? I mean, this comes as efforts to reform the payday lending industry once again come before House lawmakers, that those efforts have now stalled. This is, at the very least, very bad timing.
Right. House Bill 123 was introduced more than a year ago by State Representative Kyle Kaler from Springfield. He's got some backing from some faith-based groups and also the Pew Charitable Trust. It would put in pretty strict limits. You know, this has been going on for more than a decade. You know, Ohio voters might remember that, hey, didn't we already take care of payday lending back in 2008? And sure enough, the lawmakers put forth some very strict limits on payday lenders back in 2008. The payday lending industry put that up for a referendum, and Ohio voters, by a 2-to-1 margin, said, no thanks, we want to keep these limits in place. The payday lenders then kind of sidestepped those limits and started issuing loans through other portions of state law.
Such as car title loans.
It's through a different segment of the law. But anyway, so Ohio has some of the highest APRs when you combine the interest rates and the fees, everything kind of wrapped together. Some of these loans are costing the consumers as much as 590% APR.
Even if Cliff Rosenberger has found that he hasn't done anything illegal here, his habits as Speaker have raised a lot of questions. The lavish dinners that were funded through campaign donations and the Republican Party, and he has traveled a lot as Speaker. He would argue, I assume, saying he's doing the state's business and being an ambassador for the state of Ohio. But he's been a lot more socially active as Speaker than previous Speakers have.
Yeah, and his social media feed, as well as state records, show that he's traveled to China, Israel, Europe, Los Angeles to Boston. He's been all over the place, and that's raised some eyebrows around Capitol Square.
So what's the fallout from this, Laura? Where does this end with his resignation?
I really don't know. I mean, first off, in his resignation statement, he says, first and foremost, I believe that all my actions as Speaker have been both ethical and lawful. It's unclear to me right now, you know, why he decided to resign when he did.
Very quickly.
Yeah, very quickly. This all unfolded like a wildfire.
Yeah, within days.
Right. And so it's unclear to me, you know, why he decided to step aside. But his future is really not that bright. He didn't have a plan post 2018 that we knew of, and now, you know, to resign, he's the first Speaker in more than 50 years to step down, and the last guy stepped down just to go become state auditor. You know, to step down with an FBI investigation as a cloud over your head, I don't know, that's very damaging to your career.
I don't want you to speculate, but Mike DeWine called him. I think you're the first to report that as well. Republicans remember the CoinGate scandal and how that led to a Democratic sweep. Did he face any pressure from statewide office seekers to, look, you need to leave rather than fight this to the end?
You know, I don't know. I talked with General DeWine, and he said he merely called Rosenberger, who has endorsed DeWine for governor, and, you know, just wanted to say, if you've done anything wrong, you should do the right thing and step aside. The Democrats have seized on this. Rich Cordray had a press call, you know, saying that DeWine needs to fully cooperate and that he's inserted himself into this. And DeWine, or Cordray, actually suggested that maybe Rosenberger's phones might be tapped. And so there's a chance that there's a recording of whatever Mike DeWine said to Cliff Rosenberger.
Wow. It's really just a story that has just bubbled up out of nowhere and has just taken off. It's incredible how quickly it's changed down there.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind the Federal Bureau of Investigation, they have a public corruption squad that's based in Columbus, and they have investigated a number of public officials.
We'll certainly continue to follow the Cliff Rosenberger story. Laura Bischoff from the Dayton Daily News, thanks so much.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
Just as the Rosenberger resignation story was announced, the four Democrats running for governor met on a debate stage for the final time.
They met in Middletown. It's southwest Ohio. It's a town hit hard by the decline of manufacturing and now the opioid crisis. The session that aired on WLW-TV, the four candidates only differed slightly on the major issues, but one thing they do disagree on is a ban on assault weapons. Dennis Kucinich, wearing his NRA rating of F on his lapel, supports the ban.
I intend to break that cycle of corruption that the NRA has sponsored in Columbus and ban assault weapons, and I'm the only candidate running statewide who's willing to say that.
Thank you.
Except that he isn't the only one.
At the end of the day, as governor, I would sign a ban on assault weapons.
That was Joe Schiavone. Bill O'Neill and Richard Cordray do not support banning assault-style weapons.
If you want to own an assault weapon in Ohio, then you're going to have to take it down, in my opinion, to your local chief of police once a year and register it.
There are other things that are more immediately achievable that we can do working with the legislature.
Mike, do you think this latest debate changed anything?
No, I think it just, you know, further solidified each candidate's positions. They really do not disagree on much. This is one issue that they do disagree on, and it's an issue that has resonated a lot among, you know, far-left Democrats, especially young Democrats, the assault weapons ban. But they all support basically the same gun restrictions with the exception of banning assault-style weapons. So Kucinich is trying to take advantage of Cordray's reluctance to go hard after guns, and we'll see how that turns out.
I guess I am somewhat surprised by Cordray. I don't want to say he's moving to the right on the issue of assault weapons, but in a Democratic primary where he's facing someone like Dennis Kucinich, who is a real darling of the far left, he's straight out saying, I don't support a ban on assault weapons.
Well, he has logic to his reasoning. You know, he supports tighter background checks. He supports banning bump stocks and large capacity magazines. But his claim is, and there's research that backs it up, that most gun violence is done by pistols, handguns, that rifles and long guns do not kill nearly as many people as handguns do. So he was saying, let's focus on the handguns rather than the assault weapons. But, you know, there are statements out there where he vigorously defended gun owners' rights as attorney general and in his earlier political career that are coming back to haunt him a bit in this race. But, you know, he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. As he says he now supports the assault weapons ban, then he's labeled a flip-flopper, and then he annoys people in the fall in a possible general election. If he sticks to his guns, no pun intended, he annoys the far left.
Joe Schiavone did his usual solid job trying to portray himself as the candidate for the middle class. This is a former butcher, a former workers' comp attorney, a Youngstown area Democrat, he's a typical Northeast Ohio Democrat.
Don't forget he's a champion boxer.
Very important in the statehouse these days. I mean, yeah, it could help him out. Who knows? Getting back to Cordray, he does have some work to do. He looks somewhat uncomfortable on that stage. He's kind of stiff. He's kind of the Democratic Rob Portman, if you will. That's how he's always kind of looked to me. Very smart and articulate, but he's not really comfortable in TV debates, it doesn't seem.
No, he did not look comfortable in this format. This format, you were sitting on a stool with a little table next to you, and you had a handheld mic, and when you were asked a question.
Should be a more relaxed atmosphere.
Well, yeah, it was like the town hall meeting style.
Sure.
You get up, you can walk around, and he did not look comfortable there. I think he is helped by a podium in a debate, and less so in this town hall. But no, that's not his style. He's kind of stiff. He's brilliant. I mean, five-time Jeopardy champion of whatever it was, and valedictorian, and he's very articulate and knows his stuff. He's got a great resume, but he's not going to light any place on fire. And like you said, Rob Portman hasn't either, and Rob Portman's been very successful.
There was one exchange that could very well cost Bill O'Neill some votes. Here it is. He was asked about what is the quintessential public works project in Ohio, the project that presidential governor candidates use for photo ops.
So my question for you is, how do you plan to pay for a new Brent Spence Bridge? And is it even a priority for you? Let's begin with Mr. O'Neill.
I don't know about your bridge, but I do know that the Highway Trust Fund that went into effect back in 1954 and President Eisenhower said it was national defense. There's all kinds of money, but I don't know why we spend it.
I don't know about your bridge, Mike. This is a comment that came in Southwest Ohio. He went on to talk about highway funding, but not the bridge.
Yeah, he went on to talk about highway funding, you know, how we need more money for infrastructure. But then the moderator followed up.
Let me clarify. Did you say you don't know about the bridge? Do you know about the Brent Spence Bridge? The Brent Spence Bridge. So it's a huge gateway of travel along 7175.
And I'm sure I've gone over it many times, but no, as a judge, I found myself, it is really important for me to talk about things I know about. I don't know about your bridge.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. O'Neill. Mr. Schiavone.
You can hear the crowd. The Brent Spence Bridge is a huge issue in Southwest Ohio. This is the bridge that you take on I-71 to get from Cincinnati to Kentucky. You know, the double-decker bridge with the narrow lanes and the low ceiling, and you're always tied up
in
traffic.
The bridge, when it's out, Cincinnati traffic becomes a nightmare.
It is a huge issue down there, and it is, as you mentioned, the poster boy for infrastructure in Ohio. Donald Trump, candidates for governor, candidates for U.S. Senate, they have all done photo ops in front of that bridge saying we need to spend more money on highways. And for him not to have a clue what it is and to really dismiss it.
He says he's not a judge. He's not a judge anymore. He's a candidate for governor.
I know. I think it goes to illustrating his seriousness as a candidate. The Columbus Dispatch reported a couple of weeks ago, they had a reporter trail all the candidates, sort of like be embedded with the campaigns. Mm-hmm. And Bill O'Neill was looking for things to do. You can't run statewide and not have your day packed with events if you're a serious candidate. And then not knowing what this bridge is another indication that, you know, he's relying on his good Irish name, which won him a seat on the Supreme Court. But it's not going to work the same in this primary.
Let's turn now to our current governor with this week's edition of John Kasich GPS.
Governor Kasich, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Thanks, Chuck. So,
Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Rockville, isn't this close to Bethesda?
We went to Tulsa instead of where we were going in Colorado.
I think I've eaten my way across the entire state of New York.
Ground control to Major Tom. Help me.
The governor stayed home this week. He was at the State House pushing his package of gun bills. But that does not mean he was out of the national spotlight. Last weekend, he was on our air on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, recorded live at the Palace Theater here in Columbus.
He was pretty good. He was funny. He was a good sport. You know, he told that Nixon story, which you've heard 100 times. He played the Not My Job game, where he had to answer questions about KTEL Records, which was pretty funny. But before all that, during the interview portion, Peter Sagal, the host, asked Governor Kasich about his one-time vote in Congress to defund public broadcasting.
When you were in Congress, of course, you made your mark as a budget guy, and you played a significant role in the balanced budgets of the Clinton years.
Very significant.
I have to ask about this because I know, because you told me, that one of the things that you zeroed out back in your budget-cutting days was money for public broadcasting.
Yeah. Well, I did, because... Wait a minute. Hold on. Thanks, Peter. I'm glad I talked to you earlier today. It's really great.
They were being so surprisingly nice. No, I had to change
first of all, the arts and public broadcasting, all that was critical. At that time, I thought, I'm for it. In fact, I contributed to it. But should the public money go into it? Now, since... I know.
He knows.
Well, if I'm elected president, we'll double the budget.
There you go.
But you know what?
Who knew John Kasich was such a fan of public broadcasting?
Well, he is a fan.
I know he has written a check for us in the past.
Yes, he's been a longtime member of WOSU, but his point was that the government shouldn't pay for it. But his thinking has evolved on that, which endeared him to that crowd.
It certainly did.
But may not endear him to the far right, should he run for president again. But we have him on tape saying he'll double money for public broadcasting.
There you go. And that will do it for this week's edition of Stolly Goster. To update our listeners, that is an old term that means self-interested politician. If you like what you hear, spread the word. Tell your friends about Stolly Goster. Tell them wherever you can find it on iTunes and wherever else you get your podcasts. Also, leaving a good review on iTunes will not hurt either. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. This has been Stolly Goster from WOSU Public Media.